Hello and welcome to the John Wall episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 110, which is in honor of him being the first pick in the 2010 NBA draft. Recording this one on the evening of Monday, March 17th, aka St. Paddy's Day, in the year of our Lord 2025. My name is Logan Wortman, and as usual, I'm joined by my Manx co-host, Jacob Roth. Jacob, how does it feel to be on the John Wall episode?
Troop 41.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably some of the worst contracts in NBA history. That's crazy that it's plural, but I think that like that wasn't just one. That was multiple. Weirdly, also Bradley Beal, that duo that looked like they're going to be a problem in the East for a while. Nope, only a problem for whoever writes the checks for the Washington Wizards and then other teams as it continued. But
yeah
it feels good. What was my adjective? I'm a little I don't know if I know what that word means.
Yeah, no, I didn't until today. So that makes two of us. Manx, M-A-N-X. It means relating to the Isle of Man.
Oh.
Yeah.
The people in the Isle of Man. There you go.
Yeah. So, and it kind of works for today because today's St. Paddy's Day and Manx is a Gaelic culture.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat linked. but yeah, I thought that was interesting. Also, I accidentally wore green today. I didn't even mean to do this.
Mine is not very accident.
Oh,
mine's very St. Patrick's Day-y.
Yeah, I can tell.
Granted, I could also just wear a Celtics thing and it'd be like kind of up there. But
yeah, that would be
this
perfect,
is probably
actually
the only more St. Patrick's Day type of thing than just my that I own.
Yeah.
Than just a regular cell. Like there's a leprechaun holding a regular colored beer instead of opposed to a one of the Verde variety.
Verde.
Green in Spanish for those that didn't watch Dora or whatever the modern day equivalent is. That Go Diego Go. Pretty sure that had a run.
I have no idea.
I've got younger siblings than you. Not by a lot, but by a couple years. And those couple years matter.
Yeah, no. I remember Go Diego Go being a thing. I don't know if it still is, but
I don't know. I feel like they've gone like live action Dora. Yeah. I know that was I was a big Dora kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wanted a Dora backpack when I went to preschool. My mom was like, we're not going to do that. That seems like a bad, which is totally right call by mom. First kid, like she doesn't know what's going on. Totally the right call.
Yeah.
Totally.
No, props
totally
to her.
Totally supported that move.
Yeah.
Yeah. For being a defensive of me. But anyway, speaking of defensive, basketball has defense. That's one of the best transitions I've ever came up with.
Yes, that is one half of the game, you could say. So before we get into basketball, though, I guess, thank you guys for listening. Please be sure to hit us up on Patreon or buy me a coffee if you'd like to support us. That's patreon.com/hooptheory and buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. All of our links can also be found in the description of both the show and the episode, wherever you're watching or listening to this. We would also greatly appreciate it if you would rate the show, leave a like or a comment. Of course, be sure to subscribe and follow the feed. And lastly, we'd also love it if you send something into our mailbag for us to read and react to, basketball related or otherwise. You can send those over to hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. And without further ado, let's get into today's topics, which will be a little bit of a repeat for Jacob and I, because we did already record episode 110. It was one of the few that it's happened through the history of Hoop Theory that get just thrown away into the archives, never to be heard by anybody because of technical difficulties.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like we do a better job, though, because we've both kind of word vomited, mostly me, have word vomited out our thoughts and then get like a more refined, thought out opinion on the topics. But I don't have the time to do that every episode. But yeah, I think it does make for a better, more direct app that probably is less editing on your part, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it honestly that is a pattern that I've noticed with the few that we have had.
It's like three or four we've stumbled upon of technical issues. But it's going to be a very fun one today. And it's crazy to believe we're like running down the end of the season.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like right there.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's wild how far we are into this and how, you know, I think Selection Sunday was yesterday. So all the conference tournaments are done for college and we are set for, I haven't even looked at the bracket yet. I did see though that, I mean, because this is a Nebraska based podcast, Nebraska's not in it, obviously, because we had a terrible stretch.
They choked it at the end.
Yeah,
yep.
At the very end. But then
bad time to be bad.
Omaha and Creighton are both in the field of 68.
Omaha won the Summit, and they've looked very good. They started like 2-7.
Okay.
Same as SDSU.
My family, we were discussing, we were like, what conference are they? And everybody thought it was the Missouri Valley. And I was like, they beat Wichita State? That's kind of crazy. But
it's the Summit League.
So they're not in the same conference as Wichita State. Then.
No, they are not. They're okay. In the same conference as like South Dakota State and it's a lot of weird ones. I think St. Thomas is who they beat.
Okay.
Not the Virgin Island, but a school named St. Thomas.
Not the Virgin Island. Yeah.
They won the Summit, so shout out to them. They'd be filthy if they still had Frankie Fiddler and he didn't go to Michigan State. That'd be revolting, disgusting. The guy that was at Omaha last year, for folks that don't know, he's like a pretty solid, like, Nas Reed for, but he doesn't do the Nas Reed, but he like does that like bench start weird little thingy. He does that for Michigan State, but probably a little bit more bench than Nas Reed. Anyway, doesn't matter. Frankie Fiddler, no longer UNO Maverick. So them and then Creighton got a atrocious draw. Like, so bad.
Who are they playing?
They're playing, I believe it is Louisville, and Louisville being an 8 seed is criminal.
Yeah.
Absolutely criminal.
Didn't they just win the ACC, Louisville? Did they beat Duke in that game? I
don't know. They beat Duke, Flag was not 100%. Duke is filthy. Like, this is
Flag
the,
wasn't there at all, yeah.
Yeah, but this is one of the first years I've ever felt like Duke is actually as good as their name says they are.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you know
Duke
what I mean? Like,
really
how like
good.
Duke is always like, oh, it's Duke. They're just going to be. I feel like this is the first year where I like look at Duke. I'm like, no, they are actually. They're that. Like, the haterism in me cannot. Over. They're good. They are very good.
Yeah.
And it's not just Cooper Flag. It's a lot more than just that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, brackets are out. Nebraska's taking place in the Crown tournament,
which is a new thing.
Which is a
right?
new made for TV. Essentially, Fox doesn't get, because it's Turner and ESPN get March Madness games. The Crown is now Fox being like, you know what? We're going to take the conferences that we're the TV partner of, and we're going to make a 16-team tournament.
Okay.
And it's fine. I think the schools will make a lot of money.
So do
you get that
teams choose that over NIT?
Yeah, I believe. I don't know. But knowing where Nebraska was, they would have had an NIT bid and are in the Crown tournament.
Okay.
But I also don't know if it's like some weird contractual thing and a bunch of money in the background. And because it's like two Pac-12, two Big Ten, two Big 12, and then the rest of them are random. I don't look it up. It's called the Crown. Nebraska's taking on Arizona State on March 31st in the first round. Because Nebraska's one of the 1-4 seeds. So kind of a big deal.
One of the 1-4 4-1 seeds, you mean?
For one of the 4-1 seeds, yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know how I said that, but
1-4 seeds. I was
that's confused. Whatever. Whatever. But yeah, gotcha. It's cool. It's March. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that the committee needs to be aggressively reevaluated more than any other year ever.
For bracketology, just in general, like the whole
like why we have dudes that, and I don't mean this derogatorily, have college basketball autism. They watch exclusively college basketball, and they love it from Duke to Pepperdine. They love it. Mm-hmm. And they watch every team at least like once or twice a year, like no matter what. And they don't have any kind of input on like who gets in and who doesn't. But the athletic director of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, gets to say if the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill is in the tournament or not.
He does?
That is, yeah. He said he recused himself from those debates, but magically, like, UNC made it in as one of the last four in. They're terrible. Like, that's crazy. But West Virginia, who arguably could have been like a 10, like, didn't even need to be the last, didn't get in. Like, it's preposterous. I've never said this. I'm convinced Nebraska, if they played as good as they are talent-wise, could beat North Carolina, like, comfortably. That's never been a thing, ever. That's not totally true. Maybe, like, early 2000s. No, it'd be late 90s. Late 90s with, like, I'm going to go down a Nebraska ball rabbit hole that almost no one cares about, so I'm going to stop. Shout out to Danny Knee. But,
also, Vince Carter would have been there probably late 90s, but...
That's true.
UNC.
I still think we could have got it done.
Yeah.
I have faith. Those Danny Nee teams were nasty. We were a 4 seed and lost.
Yeah, no, I remember. Or, I mean, I don't remember it, but I do know that.
Know the story, because there's only one power four. Never mind. Let's get to basketball. Speaking of championships, playoffs around the corner, and awards are given out soon. Did you know that, Logan?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I don't know if you've heard of this guy before, but apparently there's this kind of quiet, doesn't like the media center that plays for the Nuggets that is in MVP contention with a guy that is having an absolutely insane guard season. Like, like one of the best, and I hate to say ever, because like everyone sensationalizes everything. Obviously, we're talking about Jokic and SGA for someone that's like, what's this basketball thing? And for some reason chose here to start. It's crazy. Like, obviously, we almost have both sides covered, because I've been like a big OKC guy for like kind of a while. Like, they've been like my pet team out in the West. And obviously, this is a pretty predominant Nuggets representation from you and the two Jokic jerseys hanging in the background if you're watching on the video side in Logan's background. But Logan, as we're sitting here, we're coming down the stretch, it's a two-horse race. Even though Giannis is having a great season on his own,
yeah,
his team
crazy.
Just sucks. Mm-hmm. And like, it's crazy. Like, what is he? Is Jokic what is he averaging? Is he up to 30 points? It's like just shy of 30.
Close.
It's like a triple double. He's averaging a triple double with almost 30 points.
Yeah. For a while, he was over the 30 mark for the first like half of the season, which was insane, because if you would have told me even a year ago, like if you just asked me what's the highest points per game Jokic will ever average on a season, I would have been hesitant to guess that he would average any more than like 27, 28, which was like his previous best. I think it was like 27.4, I think was his best season so far in his career. And that was like 2021, I think.
2021, 2022 was 27.1.
Oh, 27.1. Okay, yeah.
But
and so that still that feels like Jokic maxing out, honestly, is what it felt
points
like.
Points-wise,
as a scorer, yeah. But then this year, for a while, he was comfortably over 30. For several weeks in a row, he was number one in points in the league. And I was like, I never thought we would have a Jokic year like that, but yet we are having it right now. And I also would have been surprised if you told me that he would average cleanly a triple double, like over 10, not have to do any rounding, because that's just such a hard thing to do when you're not trying to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to really try to do that, it feels like, to accomplish those types of things. But as we saw, Jokic just casually get a 30-20-20 a couple weeks ago in a game that is not at all what he was attempting to do. He was just trying to win this game that went to overtime with the Phoenix Suns.
Wasn't it he had a triple-double like halfway through the third?
At the 10-minute mark in the third quarter.
Of the third, okay.
Yeah, so 2 minutes into the second half, he already had a triple-double.
And then he just got another one.
Yep.
Yeah,
which is just insane. You got two triple doubles in the same game. The only people who can say that are Jokic and Russ, which is kind of crazy too. They're teammates now, because Russ is the only one with only other person with a 20-20-20 game. Jokic the first with a 30-20-20. So yeah, it's a weird timeline we're living in with having those guys as teammates now. But to answer your question, yeah, it's just a crazy Jokic season. Putting up just historic numbers night in, night out. It feels like we just have to keep like raising the bar for him every single season, and he continues to leap over it. And then SGA, like you said, having one of the best guard seasons of all time. And I think that honestly, it's not like over sensationalizing too much, to be honest. Like, if you really quibble about it, like, maybe is he in the top 10, you know, all time guard seasons? Who knows? But like, still being in that just range is rarefied air. We don't see that happen very often. And like, this is might be a hot take, but I don't even think it's that crazy. This might be better than any individual season Kobe Bryant ever had. This SGA season.
Well, no, I mean, SGA is 33-5-6.2 for his stat line. But like, I think the important part is insanely efficient doing so. It's not just like, oh, he's doing that on a James Harden million shots a game. Like, that we kind of granted, we were wrong, and I feel like I've given James Harden an apology flower. Like, you are actually being a way better team basketball player than I thought. But, like, kind of what you expect, like, a guy just doing it, and but he's making sure everybody else eats. He's playing defense almost two steals a game. Weirdly, looking at, because I put Jokic and SGA stats side by side, more blocks than Jokic a game. Just a little fun fact there. Not, yeah. I mean, not that Jokic is exactly this block dominant center, but it's still crazy.
Yeah, I think SGA is one of the better blocking guards in league. What's it at per game? Is it close to one?
It's one even, oh, it and then wow. Jokic is at 0.7 per game for blocks. Mm. But like, he's like, it, just because of the physical tools he has, and I think you're also seeing, and the thing that never gets talked about because of all of his physical abilities, I feel like SGA's like defensive IQ is really high. I feel like a lot of the way he's able to get those blocks or those strip block things is because of like how he attacks it defensively and not just like, oh, I'm an insane athlete and can do a lot of things.
Yeah. And it also, to be fair, it is an insane luxury to be on the defense that he is on.
Where he's the worst defender. Yeah. I'm kind of joking, but
no, he is.
Kind of not.
Like, it's not even arguable. I don't think that he is clearly the worst defender, but he's not even close to a bad defender.
Because their two is, yeah, totally. There's no giddy hole anymore.
Uh-huh. And he's not even that bad, but I would say probably worse than Alexander.
Yeah. I would feel that would make it arguable, but now that that's like the Caruso / Dort, slat, like, yeah, whatever they're doing with that spot.
All of them are defensive specialists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
Even.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cason Wallace, if you're bringing him in, or.
Which is crazy. Yeah. That's one of the. I think the thing that makes this Thunder team so nuts is, do you think that the second unit of the Thunder is a playoff basketball team?
Okay, so...
Because I do.
Really?
I truly, in my...
In the East?
Arkansas, sure. Jalen Williams.
In the East, I would say so.
Okay, whatever, sure.
I'm just saying, that I think that changes it. In the West, that would be really hard. East, there's like...
It would be, but you'd have Wallace, J-Dub, Arkansas J-Dub, so Jason Will, Jalen...
Yeah, so J-Will. Uh-huh.
J-Will. Then you've got Hartenstein, Isaiah Joe...
Does Hartenstein count as a backup... He starts most of the time, doesn't he? Don't they usually start Chet and Hartenstein? Or is that only when they play the Nuggets?
I don't know, because they haven't had Caruso healthy. I don't really know. It's like a weird...
Yeah.
I guess I could look up how many...
That makes sense. I guess against the Nuggets, though, just no matter what health-wise, they would do that. But like I just see them against the Nuggets frequently, so that's why I think of Isaiah Hartenstein as a starter.
Okay, but then even then, if you like...
Sure, I'll give you Hartenstein for the sake of the exercise.
But then you've got like... Caruso or Dort, whichever one, like it's crazy. That's nuts.
It is nuts. Yeah, honestly, that would be compete with the Hawks and the Heat, I think, to be honest,
comfortably. And it's also the just sheer fervor they attack with. Uh-huh. You'd think this team was coached by Ime Udoka, who everybody just fawns over. This man, he gets the most out of his play, and I'm not saying he doesn't, but my boy Daigle Nut, shout out to previous listeners, Daigle is doing an insane job of every guy on this team is like, they're weird interviews where they all like bark like dogs. I feel like this is not this is the team. They're all just like in. They're like locked in. Like that would be the hardest locker room to just go be a, like join coming from the outside.
Yeah.
Because like how many of those are homegrown OKC guys? Shay's not, but I kind of count Shay.
Yeah, he feels like he is. Yeah,
because he got there so long. Like, also shout out Paul George, who's out for the season now officially, is why SGA is there.
Yeah,
and then there's another major player is somewhere because of Paul George. Like a pick turned into somebody or something. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Oladipo, Sabonis, also.
Yeah. That's crazy. There's just, this team is so fun and it makes me mad because like, what do you do? There's nothing you can do. The only thing is I think, and I can't remember which podcast this was, if it was Bill Simmons or somebody, said like, can you match the energy? Essentially like in the regular season, they're attacking every game with playoff energy. In a 7-game series, could you then match that intensity? Like you wouldn't be able to get punched back for one night. Because they've got to win three more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And especially because they'll be at home. You're expected to lose that home. That you're going to need one win one in OKC. But like if they punch you in the nose game one, and you can like get yourself settled in, start matching their intensity. Not that this is the easiest thing to say as opposed to do, but I'm curious how it'll translate to the playoffs, which we'll get to see here in a couple of months. But it's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, so that's why I think that SGA, it feels like the media has kind of not necessarily handed it to him already, but if it does feel a lot like a lot of the media members are just like, no matter what happens, they're like, it's going to Shea. And but it also does feel like most of the just general community, like on Twitter and in like Reddits and all, you know, all that kind of stuff, it feels like there's a lot more Jokic narrative being pushed in those spaces.
And then SGA, like, legitimate hate because of the foul baiting thing that makes me mad when I watch, but it makes me mad, but that's whatever.
No,
I just feel like he's just Chris Paul, but bigger. And so, like, when he does the Chris Paul, like, flail thing, he just, like, can make it look more natural because of his gifts.
Smoothness.
I don't know. Just, he's just smoother with it. And then, yeah. Yeah, it just is,
mm-hmm.
That's how I feel.
No,
but he's
that.
Good. He's very good. I'm not trying to take away from this man at all because he's insanely good at basketball and is deservedly to be in this conversation. But then you look at the guy that we talk about all the time that I feel like somehow is not in the media, but people are getting tired of voting for him.
Yeah.
Like he's not like pushed everywhere, but like the man's stat line. It's 29.1, so 29 points, 12.8 rebounds, and 10.3 assists.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, and then almost 1.8 steals, because Jokic just does that cerebral thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, kind of wild.
Yeah, no, for real. I just don't see how... And you get the wins with in there too. Like, I mean, obviously Nuggets past few games have not looked awesome. Just a little bit of a slump, I think. But still, our record on the season is 43-25 at this snapshot of the season, and that is, you know, 63% win percentage. So that's what a pace for 0.63 times 82 is 51.5 games. Like, that's
the thing that makes it kind of nuts is the Thunder have 56 already.
Yeah, no, for sure. But to me, I feel like the winning conversation, usually, to me at least, it's always been like, it's a minimum. Like, there's a bar you have to get to in terms of wins.
It's a floor to entry as opposed to a like decider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, like, yeah, the Thunder are eviscerating everybody, but have you seen their lineup? Like, or, you know, just their roster in general? Like, they're the deepest team in the league, and they've got by far the best defensive personnel, you know, you could imagine in this NBA, honestly. With Shea as, like, just a pure bucket getter. Like, the best to do what he's doing right now, like that comparison I made before with Kobe, like, he's the best at doing that thing since Kobe.
Yeah, where it's like, it's so crazy because he just doesn't do the same thing over and over again. Like I said the thing about the foul baiting, and people online will complain about the foul baiting thing. But he'll like, he has like other things he does that are like hard to stop. And oh yeah, he can kind of shoot threes now.
Yeah,
just to sprinkle that little nugget in. That was like the one limiting factor on his offensive ceiling. He's broke that. Fun fact.
Yeah.
I don't know what the ceiling is now because it's absurd.
Yeah.
I've never seen, like, no one can do anything. Teams that are built like they're supposed to be able to stop them, he gets people in foul trouble. Him and Giannis are on an island of, like, average fouls committed against them per game.
Yeah.
Like, SG is fouling out a player on average every game. He's just over 6 fouls per game. Giannis is the only other person that's doing that. And Giannis is like, that's the only way you can stop him. But SGA doesn't have the thing where it takes him 45 minutes to shoot a free throw, and most of them go in. So it's like this, and he gets to the free throw line like 10 times a game. I feel like we recorded this first time and I was way meaner to SGA. But then like I started, because as I usually do, I reflect after we record. I'm like, I was way too mean. I was like getting way too mad about the, because I just had watched a game where I'm like, dude, this gets me so mad. But it just feels, it's like a, and I think I weirdly use this analogy to describe Jokic when his triple-double, but this kind of feels the same with SGA offensively. It feels like a really good high school basketball player and can just kind of do whatever he wants at the end of a game. And he's like, oh, I'm going to get to the foul line and I'm going to close this game out for my team. And like the coach is just like, do it, man. Yeah, that totally works. But like the player doesn't love to score. So he'll like kick it around sometimes if that's the best thing to do. It's just crazy. It's like he has the Kobe memes of like he never passed. I feel like SGA doesn't have that to the same extent at all. Like everybody eats. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I think
to the point
he,
where it's detrimental, like Jokic, where he's like, I don't want this ball, get it out of my hands.
Yeah, no, for sure. The balance is a lot more even. I think with Shea, he is always looking to score first, I would say. Like, he's a score first guard. But then as soon as the defense collapses or shows him, you know, another option, like, he's very willing and very ready to take that other option to, like, you know, find the open man. When Kobe, a lot of times, would actually even, at times, he would make it a point to
not,
you know, like very aggressively not take that option, or like, you know, make it pretty blatant that he was like, I'm not trusting my teammates right now because they're bad.
Yeah.
If people remember the Kobe era after Shaq left and the Lakers were pretty terrible, that the Kobe 81 point game came in that era.
That run before Powell, essentially. That window between Shaq before Powell. Mm-hmm. That is the Kobe we're talking about. That kind of like Kobe was branded with for the rest of his forever career. Like, that's just what people remember. That was like a window. He always had that kind of, I'm going to do this thing, but it was only really bad when his team needed it to win games, kind of.
Yeah. And then when he started getting criticized, like he started getting slammed for being like that. He had like several games stretch in a row where he didn't like shoot at all. He just kept passing it. And he's like, see what these guys can do. Like, see how bad my teammates are. But yeah, that's just Kobe. But so Shea, he is a lot more like, just balanced. And I don't know, in a weird way, kind of ethical in that sense of the game, just in terms of like distributing it, like being a black hole. But in terms of getting to the line, he does have a lot of crafty ways that he maneuvers around, and every time a player will put, you know, their hand in front of him when they're trying to stay in front of him because of how like shifty and slithery he is very good at picking up his off arm in a way that hooks that arm into him, so he brings it up with his shot to force the defender to, you know, foul him, basically.
As someone that claims Jason Tatum is their GOAT, I have no problem with those fouls. Those are totally legitimate, totally deserved. There's nothing wrong with hooking and ripping your arm up.
That's fair. I think that's like the vast majority of SGAs. But then he also has the booty ball ones where
and those are the ones that make me so mad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just because his, like, I also think I would not care if the NBA did not say, we are going to combat this issue and then do nothing. And then the two quickest rising stars over the past two seasons are like SGA and Jalen Brunson, the two guys that just do it a lot. Anyway, that is all. I need to stop cutting you off, but
No, that's fair. That's fair. But so SGA, I do feel like the foul baiting thing is a little bit just highlighted because of how often he's put in those situations where it's like the defender is doing something illegal, so it should be a foul. But also the way that SGA highlighted it or like brought it to attention is like a flaily, you know, not really trying to score type of action. And yeah, he's like trying to bring attention to the whistle or whatever. So I understand. Yeah, it's a little bit unethical. There's debate you can have about, you know, that type of thing. But at the end of the day, though, in terms of the value he provides to his team, that is, you know, getting the job done for sure. He's being very efficient playing the ball or playing the game that way. Like we said, averaging 33-5-6 at the moment, and the Thunder have a record of 56-12, which is just insane. So like, in a weird way, I do feel like I wouldn't be mad if SGA wins it this year just because of how good of a season he's having.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like with Michael Malone, what he said, I don't know if you saw his quote, but saying that if you just like
player A, player B.
Yeah. you didn't know who the two players were. You just looked at their numbers. And you didn't know that one of them already had three MVPs. Like, it's obviously Nikola Jokic. I do kind of agree with that, to be honest.
No,
but also,
yeah. I do think that's super fair. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's going to be another Embiid MVP type of thing, but like,
yeah,
SGA I feel like is like more deserving. Like, it's honestly criminal that either of these one of these seasons will not receive an MVP award, and that just feels not fair. Like, life's not fair, but that feels truly. Honestly, I'm willing to loop in Giannis' season. It's just like kind of shadowed by the two insane seasons we're seeing. The fact that these seasons are not going to have an MVP trophy after the stat line for that player in Basketball Reference is such a bummer. Like, obviously, Charles Barkley doesn't have a ring. But, like, it just is... Mm-hmm. It's, like, these are so good seasons that have, like, historical gravity to them. And they will just be like, could have been a different year. And that's just mm-hmm. brutal. That's just crazy.
Yeah. And when you talk about that from the historical context, I just do really feel like it should be Jokic when I think about it that way also, where it's like, how can you look at this stat line in the future and be like, he didn't win MVP? You know,
but then, like, SGA's, isn't that like kind of close too?
Like, I think that's, but that I feel like it's not still to comparable the same degree. To,
yeah,
I feel like there's not a season that you can bring out that hasn't won MVP that you can compare Jokic's season to this year. I feel like there might be a few for SGA's. Like, there might be a couple that are comparable.
If Jokic turns it on and down the stretch and gets to 30 points a game, it's undeniable. Then it's heresy. Then it's like you punched your ticket like a month and a half ago and you stopped watching the NBA. Like, this is insane. Granted, a whole point to make up at this point in the season is a lot, but he just had that 40 piece because nothing was going right for them against the Wizards.
Wizards.
They're 0-2 against the Wizards?
Yep. Yep. This season got swept by the Wizards.
That's the put a banner in the rafters of I almost said Chesapeake, but that's OKC. What's the
Wizards arena?
Yeah.
It was Capital One.
Capital One. Just put it up in the rafters. Yeah. Alex Saar looked like an absolute animal. He looked so it's like 31 points. He looked so good.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we don't need to dwell on that,
he looked
but
like
that was
the number one pick.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was the only time he's looked like that, like, not all year, but he looked very good.
For sure.
It is definitely a two-horse race at this point. Flowers to Giannis for having also a great season and just not being there because you're not melting the minds of what basketball should be. You're not being that insane. And that's what it takes to win an MVP this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, and going back to the Embiid thing, how, you know, Embiid had won a couple years ago instead of Jokic. I feel like comparing this season for SGA to that, like, I feel like SGA is more deserving of winning MVP this year than Embiid was that year.
Yeah.
Because if you look at, like, the stats, it was like Embiid scores more than Jokic, and that was, like, really the only argument he had over Jokic. Like, in terms of team success, the records were, like, literally the same. And the West was harder.
Yeah.
So it just felt like, why should this go to Embiid? There's not really a tiebreaker here that's making Embiid pull ahead. It's just kind of a narrative thing.
Other than media narrative and voter fatigue. That was, like, the only maybes. Because Jokic, that would have been his third in a row and made the chain of four. But it was broken by this Embiid year that...
But he hadn't won a ring yet, so he wasn't allowed to.
He did, though. He did win one. So now he could. Now, if he can decide to get three MVP trophies in a row, they'll allow it.
Mm-hmm. He just has to put himself in that position again.
Yeah. Which, not have insane other likable, like, honestly, I feel like he's going to keep getting nipped by this media thing. Like, potential faces of the league, like, let's say Ant goes nuclear next year. Jokic isn't going to win. They're going to give it to Ant for sure. Like, down Wemby. Wemby will probably get one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not that that will not be deserving. I'm just saying that, like, Jokic might get nipped for not being even close to, like, I want to be a face of the NBA. Like, I saw a graphic for the Nuggets. I can't remember what the game was. It was legitimately Jamal Murray's picture. Instead of it being Jokic.
Oh.
It was legit. Yeah. There was a picture of Jamal Murray representing the Nuggets. Or maybe it was Jamal Murray and then there was more. I just saw Jamal Murray and my brain was like, what am I looking at? That's like when the Patriots were so bad 2 years ago, they just put Bill Belichick instead of a player. They just didn't know what to do. So they just were like, Chargers, Patriots, Sunday, or Monday night or Thursday night football, whatever garbage game, primetime game it was. And it was just Bill Belichick.
That's funny.
Didn't have a player to put.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just, it was a sad time. And the Nuggets are in the opposite of that. But the NBA isn't a sad time, because I'm still mad about that time when the Nuggets played the Cavs and the Celtics played the Thunder in like the same weekend. And none of them were nationally televised. I'm still upset about that. Still just very irritated. And makes an even more compelling argument that they should move the NBA season potentially further back. But that needs to be a different episode, because we get to dissect the poo-poo town of the East. Is that what we're ready to move to?
Yeah, we're going to do the East today, which, yeah, is honestly, it's under-talked about how bad the East is this year.
Yeah, and you know what else is bad? If you've made it this far into the video and not hit subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, that's terrible. If you're enjoying what you're doing, you've made it, by the time Logan edits, 37 minutes, 38 minutes in. And, oh, the intro, 39 minutes in. You're 39 minutes into this video, and you haven't hit like, subscribe, anything. You should do that. Also, while you're at it, hit the notification bell, and check on down in the description for Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, and all the other things.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. And with that, I guess we can jump into the East.
The dumpster.
Or did you want to actually look at the NBA championship odds?
Oh, yes. Yes, Logan. These have changed dramatically since our first attempted recording. Dramatic.
Okay, I'm very interested, because I think when we did this last time, the number one team was the Celtics. Correct?
They still are, yes.
Okay, so they still are number one.
It's more the numbers that got nuts to me.
Mm. And so when did the Celtics become one over the Thunder? Because I know the Thunder were number one for a while.
Did the Thunder have like a weird loss that were like, oh, maybe they're too young,
or is
they're
it
not
just
ready?
That the Celtics got out of their rut. Is that what it was?
Maybe KP looked healthy. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't look healthy, but I have no idea. I'm not sure. I could probably go back and find like a betting like math
history
thing.
Yeah,
history,
no, that's
but I'm not doing that at the moment.
Uh-huh. No, that makes sense. So the second team, I would guess the Thunder is the second.
But this is essentially a toss-up now. It's 185 plus for the Celtics, 190 plus for the Thunder. So essentially that's just a coin flip. I mean, a little bit different, giving the Celtics the you've done it before nod. But I feel like the fact that they did it last year, that should probably be flipped. Because like doing it again has not been done since the Warriors with Super Team KD, Steph, Draymond, Clay before they all got old and hurt. There's been no repeat since. It's been all a constant changing crown. And then also, the way the Thunder are playing, they're just like hungry. They're like, we're doing this now. Our window is now. And let's cook. And it's awesome to watch, unless you super don't like the Thunder. Like, if you're like a Seattle Supersonics fan still, and you like hate that they got taken out of Seattle, you're probably just stewing. You're like, that could have been our team. We could be putting another green and gold rafter in the banner in the rafters. I'm livid. But did you just cool thing? I think we've talked about this. Thunder did say they would give the history back to Seattle and start in 2008, which is cool. Cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. Or 2009, whatever year it'd be. Eight.
Yeah,
it's eight. Isn't eight? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are the top two. At three, this one, like the top three, if you get the order wrong, I'm like, okay, come on. Let's be real here. Who do you think three is?
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah. 525. So it's a bit of a drop, but then there's a big drop to four.
So 185 is the Celtics.
185, 190, and then 525.
And then five? Wow. That is a big drop.
It does feel a bit strong.
Yeah.
Because if you cannot acknowledge that the Cavaliers are good now, you are just looking at names and being like, that doesn't feel right. Like, you haven't watched. You'd be like, they're bad since LeBron left. Like, that's, like, I don't get that. Because I was a non-believer. I was like, they're going to stop shooting so well. Evan Mobley's going to find Earth again. Nope. Man has gone past the moon to the sun. I think maybe the most deserving Cavalier of a All-NBA spot. I know that Donovan Mitchell will get it no matter what, but I feel like Evan Mobley is so good. If they get three, I'm going to scream. I'm going to scream if they get three. I'm going to scream so loud.
I don't know if you've heard the crazy stat of Donovan Mitchell apparently is leading the league in scoring if you just took away the fourth quarter from everybody around the league. Like, if you only looked at players in the first three quarters of games.
I think that's legitimately just factually incorrect. I believe SGA is that. Because I've seen this exact same stat, but it's SGA.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So maybe this might changed. Just be second. Then?
This might be a couple of weeks off.
Old, yeah, it could. Yeah, so this is something that I feel like I heard a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
but I also my information was a little bit old, so I don't know. Maybe that's changed. But the two teams that are blowing teams out and have insane point differentials, their best scorers, very good through three quarters.
And also, even you know, think about what we're talking about right now. That person either being SGA or Donovan Mitchell is insane that they would be close in contention for that title. When one of them is averaging 33 points a game and the other one is averaging 23 points a game.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. Actually, yeah. I think the graphic I saw is SGA through three quarters might be the second leading scorer in the NBA.
So he would be right behind
Mitchell? No. If you take SGA through three quarters and then SGA himself, the only person that SGA through three quarters is behind is SGA overall. Yeah. Like, with the fourth point.
Oh. So he wouldn't even be behind Giannis, you're saying?
I don't think so. The graphic I saw, again, this is a little old, but I believe that is what I saw and understood via the graphic that I watched. I viewed with my eyeballs. Moving past the Cavaliers, that is nuts, though, to think that they're even in the same conversation with a 10-point per game differential.
Yeah,
that
it's just when you think about Donovan Mitchell, you're thinking like, oh, he's having one of his worst seasons. But then when you look at how many minutes he's played, it's like, not playing. That's why.
Yeah.
Because they destroy everybody. He sits
all four
quarters.
That's like with like high school records and like the record books. If a team is too good, like their best player never breaks records. Mm-hmm. Except for maybe career ones. It's because like, that football record, he rushed for 1,400 yards in a 10-game high school football season. He only played about he averaged like three quarters a game. Like that makes it a little bit harder to break records when you don't have as much time on the field. Moving on, speaking of time on the court and on the field, the team that's next has looked a lot better on their time on the court as of recent. What riser and this after the post trade deadline riser do you think sits in fourth?
At four?
It gets very close for the next three. The odds are within plus 100 of each other.
I'm thinking it's either the Lakers or the Warriors.
It's the Golden State Warriors.
Wow.
Which they look filthy. And then the Lakers, fourth. I think they were third. I think the Lakers got moved because LeBron and Luka are both injured for some amount of time.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, then at fifth, it's only 100 different. So that's plus 1,400. Fifth and sixth are tied at plus
15. Oh, so the Lakers are tied with somebody?
Yeah.
Fifth and sixth. The Knicks would be my guess.
This is where it gets a little wild. No.
Okay, so it's not the Knicks. Maybe the Timberwolves, because they've been really good lately.
Nope.
Is it an East team?
Too hard. No, it's a West team.
Oh, the Nuggets.
Yeah, the Nuggets. It's the Nuggets.
I honestly forgot about them.
Yeah. I assume when he went to the T-Wolves, I was like...
Yeah.
But yeah. It is the Nuggets at plus 15. Then there is a plus 15... 100 gap, meaning the Lakers are twice as likely in their mind to win it over the next team, which feels crazy to me.
Which is the Knicks, I would guess?
It is the Knicks. Unless they're like trying to like big brain, like the Knicks are going to have a tough first round matchup in the playoffs. They're going to get like the Pacers or the Pistons, which is, we'll talk about later. Awesome. They're at plus 3,000. Then it kind of just keeps, like, the teams are pretty much the teams you'd expect, and then the odds get just crazy as you keep going. But the next team is the Bucks at plus 5,000.
Okay.
Grizzlies at plus 6,000.
Wow. So the Grizzlies are over the T-Wolves and the, I guess, who else would be right
Nobody.
Under there?
Nobody. It's, like, after this team, the plus 750 underneath the Grizzlies, it goes to plus 10,000. So, like, essentially... Okay. They'll make the playoffs, but we're not, like, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. What, just out of curiosity, what are the Sixers at?
I think they are at the odds that are no longer able to make the playoffs. It is plus, is that a million? Plus 100,000. I had to count my zeros.
For winning the championship?
Yeah, but essentially that is Bulls, Nets, Sixers, Blazers, Wizards, Raptors, Hornets, teams that I think are now ineligible for playoff contention.
What do you mean? They can get in the play-in, though. And if you get in the play-in, you can get in the playoffs, right?
Oh, you're right. So yeah, they just have them on an island.
I think all of them...
So technically, the Pelicans and the Jazz have been just straight up eliminated. And they're not even on this list, now that I'm looking, because they can't be.
Yeah.
Silly me.
I don't think the... Now that I'm looking at those standings, though, I do think that Sixers probably won't make it in the play-in.
Well,
it's not
it
impossible
depends
mathematically,
on,
but they, we'll be talk, tough.
I guess we can kind of just dive into the East. We're going to go bottom up.
Yeah, they're five kinda. Games behind the Bulls right now at the 10 spot, the Sixers.
So in the dumpster is the Wizards who swept the Nuggets this year. Yeah. We want to build from the bottom and go up and like start talking about the East power rankings. Uh-huh. I have the Wizards at dead last because I think they are the worst.
Yeah, I do have them at in the bottom. I kind of did this in tiers. I have them and the Hornets as the two teams in this bottom tier.
Alex Sarr looked good. Wizards have random moments. Have fun getting like Naz Reid next year or somebody that like deserves money that their team can't pay them. Who's another? Wallace will get money. Either the J Will's up or J Dub and J Will. Are they up? One of those guys might be a Wizard.
Yeah.
Or maybe they got one more year before they have to do that. Because they're the same draft class, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. They were in the same draft class.
So like that's what the Wizards I think are gonna be. I was just like the guy that the Jeremy Grants of this generation that are like, they're too good for the contract they're on. They want to get money, which I cannot blame, but they are going into a situation they know they will not be winning.
Yeah, to be clear, the Jeremy Grant of like when he was on the Nuggets.
Yes, the Nuggets before he went to the
modern Jeremy Grant on the Blazers is not too good for his contract. It might be the inverse there.
It very much is so. But what got him that contract was like, this guy's insane.
Uh-huh.
And then he looked pretty good on the Pistons, and then he went to the Blazers, and things fell apart. Who do you have in your next tier of teams?
Yes, after the Wizards and Hornets, who the Hornets have shut down. Is LaMelo out for the season? Is that a thing?
I actually turned off my Hornets notifications because I don't care anymore. I was sick of seeing, because all of the Hornets notifications I got were like not basketball things. It was like, look how cool LaMelo's outfit was walking into the stadium. That must suck to be the most exciting thing to talk about for your team.
Yeah.
At least like the Sixers would be like, we could have been so good. If Lady Luck and injury Jesus wouldn't have done us so dirty, we would have been so good. There is no hope in Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's just a pit of despair and LaMelo Ball wearing a Band-Aid because he has a tattoo on his neck. Like, it's it's just devastation.
Yeah, no, and apparently he is not very much, definitely not out for the rest of the season. He's not even injured at the moment.
Oh,
I don't know.
Shout out to healthy LaMelo.
I'm just remembering every other season of his career so far and misremembering that as this season. But yeah, he's healthy at the moment, actually. Same with his teammate Mark Williams, who somehow failed his physical going to the Lakers, but never stopped playing that entire time. He never missed a game.
This is my theory. I feel like the Lakers saw the social media like, what are you doing? Like, we get in a vacuum. This is a good idea. But this is a big question mark. And they're like, we don't think that he's healthy enough. Our team doctors are not going to sign off on this lingering chronic back injury. I think it's his back that he has.
What was it?
I'm
heard
sure
multiple things. There's something with his foot and there's something with his back. I don't know which one failed, but yeah.
But I just, anyway, the team doctor was like, we're not going to do this anymore. Uh-huh. And then it made me immediately think, you know what the Mavericks could have done? You know another player that has a chronic injury that nobody really knows what's wrong?
The doctors. Kawhi?
There could have been a team doctor that laid on the sword and gotten fired and just failed AD's physical. Like, I'm not letting you do this to Dallas.
Honestly.
I refuse Nico Harrison. He could have put his job on the line for the city of Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose not to. It's the doctor's fault. It has nothing to do with Nico Harrison. It's exclusively the doctor's fault.
The doctor isn't the one who decides to rescind the trade. He just decides if the physical has failed or not. And then the GM can decide whether or not to, like...
Oh, what if that comes out later? That the doctor's like, AD's nope. Don't do this.
And then Nico was like,
he's my guy.
Yeah.
Slap the green button. Slap the big red button that says nuke Dallas's economy for the rest of forever. I think it was House, I believe, legendary rant by House on the Bill Simmons podcast and worst contract.
Yep. Worst contract episode in the league. Nico Harrison.
Great, great, great episode to listen to. Just some sound bites. Look at the alchemy he performed. Context isn't going to be given. You got to go listen for the context. Laid it out just perfectly of like, he's like, I think this could cost Dallas like $2 billion with a B dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the next 5 years. Because if I own a business in Dallas and my graphic or my company logo is anywhere in that stadium, I'm not paying the price I was paying before.
Honestly.
He's like, sure. ESPN crews are never going to be in town. There's nothing to watch. I love PJ Washington, but he's not that guy.
Exactly. Kyrie's out for the season. AD hasn't played a full game since they've gotten him.
He looked really good before he got hurt.
He did. He really did.
Kind of weird, though, that they had him wearing those like all white jerseys. And like there's like a world. What if that's the last basketball game he ever plays? It's just a random one-off of AD in that white Dallas jersey. That'd be weird.
Honestly. Yeah, that would be crazy. But yeah, it's you know, the thing with NBA teams is, you know, they never go, or all of the big four sports, honestly, the franchise values never go down, except for this one rare case where somehow Nico Harrison was able to, you know,
make things worse.
Make it happen.
Speaking of poorly ran teams and poorly GM teams, there's an entire rule named after a former GM of the team that I have in the next tier, the Brooklyn Nets.
Mm-hmm.
You can't trade two consecutive firsts.
Wasn't he the Cavs GM? I thought Stepien.
Is the Stepien rule based on the Cavs? I always thought it was the Nets. I blindly thought it was the Nets.
It makes sense for the Nets. Because
that's like the exact thing that they did that doomed them and why the Celtics have the Jays.
Yeah, but they still weren't even able to trade the consecutive years. So they did it as much as they're allowed to do it with the Stepien rule.
Oh, that's why it lasted so long.
Yeah, because they had to do it every other year and then do a pick swap in the years that they weren't allowed to do, you know.
Okay.
That's how they navigate around the Stepien rule is they do pick swaps in the years that they can't trade.
So he was a Cavs GM.
Yeah, like back in the 80s or 90s where he was like, he had a good team, but he was like, I don't want to win in the future. I want to win right now. Why do I need picks? Can't I just trade all of my picks? And the league was like, no, don't do that. The city's not going to have any fans in 10 years. Like,
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, sometimes the NBA stepping in is okay. But do you have anybody else on that Nets tier? I know you kind of said a couple as we were going into it, but then got derailed.
Sixers, Raptors, Bulls. I would probably put all of those teams in that tier. Maybe that's fair. I think the Bulls might be a little, in a weird way, a little bit just hovering over those teams in somehow. Which is why Giddey I feel like good. There should be a play. Giddey's looked good. Year.
Yeah. Giddey's looked good. I will defend him. And also, honestly, that was one of the best, like, if you haven't really paid attention to basketball at all and you're just jumping in, listen to that Bill Simmons podcast after you're done with this one about the contract trades. Because they talked about, like, Scotty Barnes, and I'm like, I love this. This is genius. Because, like, he hasn't looked great, and he's due a bunch of money next year. He hasn't looked like bad. He was an all-star because of a bunch of people saying, I'm not doing it last year. But it's they're 24-44, and things don't feel great probably for them.
Yeah, he's just kind of been given the keys for what feels like no reason at all in his career so far. It's like, oh, he's the next franchise guy, and everybody just agrees that that's the case. And it feels like, it's like, why? Why do we all agree that that is the case?
It's kind of like a college football coach winning 9 games over 3 seasons then getting a 4-year extension, inexplicably.
Mm. That flew over my head, but...
His name is Scott Frost. No, the Bulls are, like, weirdly feisty. They're not good, but, like, I feel like they don't deserve to be in the same pit of despair as the previous 5 teams we've mentioned. So okay, I'm glad that you gave them a little weird, like, you're really bad, and the 9-10 game is going to be a formality, but,
Yeah, there really shouldn't be. It feels like, how about we just take the top 6 in the East? Because the
so top 2 just get a bye? Sure.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, all the teams in the play-in this year for the East feels like they aren't playoff teams.
I feel like this is going to be the thing where, like, GMs in the West and owners in the West go to the NBA meeting and are like, hey, how about crazy idea. When we go to 32 teams, shuffle things up a little bit. Maybe maybe we differentiate some markets. Maybe, like, I don't know, don't let the East bottom be the entire top half of the lottery.
Yeah.
You make the playoffs in your conference, but then everything gets reseeded. So then, like, everybody still would make the playoffs, but, like, the Thunder wouldn't have to get the gift of the Clippers in the first round. That doesn't seem as fair as the Cavs getting the Magic?
Yeah, the Magic or the Hawks or the Heat. Like,
it's very just levels. This feels like this year's worse than the others because of how bad the top of the West was almost always up there. Like, that was never the question. But it felt like there was this nice sandwich where, like, top of the West, a big majority of the East, and then the West finished out, and then the bottom feeders were just kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But now it's like West, a little bit of East, West. a little bit of East, rest of the West, the rest of the East. Yeah. It's a poorly constructed sandwich. You got, like, lettuce underneath the bread. It doesn't work. It's so bad. And it's... This doesn't feel real. The Hornets are 40 and a half games behind the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
The Thunder are 41 games ahead of the eliminated Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
That's half the possible games they play.
No, that total. Is... That's a lot.
It's so bananas.
Yeah. that is crazy. But I do feel like the seven seed being the Hawks at 32 and 36 is kind of wild that you're four games under 500 and you're the seven seed.
East Hawks have not been lucky injury wise defending the Hawks.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That it's just the fault of the East. And what you were saying about having when they
making the playoffs last year.
Say that again?
It's like the Grizzlies making the playoffs last year.
Honestly. But like what you were saying about the East, when we add two more teams to the NBA expansion and them reshuffling things to try to even out the conferences a little bit, the pushback you're going to get from that because, you need the vast majority of teams to agree on a change like that. And you're basically guaranteed half of the team, so every team in the East, to not agree to that because they like having, less competition.
No, the good. And then the other thing that I think they need to do, and I know Bass, you're going to probably hate the sentence to come out of my mouth, but I feel like with how bad the divide is right now in the NBA, the way they need to do it is NFL style. There's not an East and a West. It's you are the ABL and the NBL. Mm-hmm. Like you're like separate leagues or conferences or it'd be conferences. So it'd be like I don't want to do American Basketball Conference and National Basketball Conference because that's literally what the NFL does.
ABC and NBC, and they're also like...
there's no world that would ever
television
happen.
Networks.
I'm trying to think. Anyway, but you need to break it up in some way. Maybe you go north-south and draw like a weird diagonal line. I don't know how you do it, but you need to change up something because it's bad. It's so bad. Also, if you do north-south, it'd be even more off-putting than the east-west line. Because the north-south line would be, like, in the middle of Georgia. Like, it would be so hard to visualize.
Yeah. I get because, there are a lot of teams up in the lakes in northeast, though.
Would that essentially change anything, then?
Yeah, so it would be... I feel like it would be pretty even. Because you got a lot... I mean,
there's... Because we'd catch... I say we, because my Celtics would be in the north.
Mm-hmm.
We might honestly get the Nuggets.
Yeah,
the
probably.
Blazers, the Kings,
Seattle,
and the T-Wolves, and Seattle when they're in expansion.
All
and
the
then
Lakes
lose
teams.
Charlotte.
Orlando, Miami.
Atlanta probably, and then you get into weird, like, where that exact line is. Mm-hmm. But that feels like you're trading a couple bads for a couple goods, and weirdly enough, because of how disjointed things are, you still can keep a big core of the Northwest division now.
Yeah.
Like, it could kind of work a little bit. But then you'd have to split those into four groups of four, north, south.
Yeah. I feel like it might be even more imbalanced, to be honest. Like, the north seems like it'd be really good, weirdly.
But the south would have the two LAs. It'd have Texas. Yeah. It'd have probably OKC. My brain had OKC staying south, which is kind of important to this. Memphis, Golden State. I guess I said California. The Suns.
Would Golden State?
I don't think you'd be able to draw a straight. I guess draw a straight line. That's true. Like, you might have to fudge it a little bit for the balance. That could be a whole other episode, too. We've got two of those just locked and loaded topic-wise. But the bottom of the East is really effing bad.
Mm-hmm. Like, no, for sure.
Years of rebuild, a decade of rebuilding to fix some of these teams.
Yeah,
the Bulls convinced that the Wizards will see a winning season before it's 2030-plus.
Wizards?
No matter what they do. Like, you could have every player that grew up in the DC Metro be like, I want to be a Wizard for cheap. And they still couldn't do it. They'd be like, KD's like, I'm coming home.
Yeah.
And then Melo comes out of retirement. I'm trying to think of other people, but like, it would just be bad. But that's the bottom feeders. They suck. I'm convinced the Miami Heat are good for one half so they don't look like they're tanking. And then slowly tell Bam to look like he's never played basketball and he's 14 years old. Like, they just tell him to be not Bam Adebayo that, like, looked really good before Jimmy Butler was arguing for his money. You know what I mean? Like, Bam looked pretty good, and then he looked really bad.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the first part of his career, we thought that Bam was going to be, like, the next franchise player for this team.
But think about it. Think about it. Bam gets mad in Miami. He looks bad. Discount deal. Drew Holiday retires. Al Horford's gone. Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, teammates wearing green.
Mm.
Perfectly lines up.
Yeah, to be honest. The Heat with Terry Rozier also being terrible.
That's just so bad. Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness.
I don't understand why, but that's just...
Or how? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a reality that we have. He got traded from the Hornets, where somehow he was really good with the Hornets, and then just immediately, as he got to the Heat, just zapped all of his powers away.
Yeah, he got Monstar.
Yeah. The Magic have been a confusing
mess.
Just whack job season out of, like, it's just, you know, started off Paolo amazing. Looked like he's taking the next leap. He's a certified.
Kind of like is he an MVP candidate legitimately early? Granted, the season, there's no way that he would have kept that up and became an MVP candidate. But, like,
yeah,
he was so good. I think the second I saw it, I said, I'm so mad. This is going to be a what-if that bugs me forever.
I remember you texted me, right when he got injured.
I was so mad.
Mm-hmm. Tore his oblique and was out for a good stretch after the first five games, where he was averaging like 30 points a game over those five games. And then Franz took off, and the Magic
kept
as a whole just took off. Yeah. Franz put to bed all of those, like, the haters over the summer saying that his contract was, all that kind of stuff. Like,
this guy, I was pointing at myself for audio only listeners.
Yeah. And he was just looking amazing, being like the engine focal point of the team is like heliocentric Franz. And then he goes down and somehow they're still staying above water for the most part, is as well as you can when your two best players are out.
Jalen Suggs became beloved.
Mm-hmm. He turned into the number one option somehow and was still guarding dudes on the other end. And also, I forgot to mention, Franz got injured with the same exact injury that Paolo did, which was just weird. It's not even like a normal basketball injury. That's like a baseball injury, apparently, a torn oblique. And then Jalen Suggs goes down, and then it's like...
But the other thing,
everything's
the other guys are back. Other guys are back. So the glue
Franz,
of Jalen Suggs...
came back. Doesn't matter. They're the worst offense in the league. With their two best players back and their third best player gone,
who's
apparently
not an offensive guy.
Yeah, he might be. Apparently, he's just the best player on the team somehow. like, he honestly,
The definition of MVP.
Yeah.
For the Magic, it's like MVP FTM. Most valuable player for the Magic.
He should just get belated votes casted for him.
There's going to be one, like, a Magic fan that gets a vote. He's like, I'm going to throw my vote away. I don't even care. gives Jalen Suggs a third. He probably won't be eligible game wise, but anyway, yeah.
No, that's the one thing that takes him down there. But the only one though.
That's the only thing.
Yeah, the only guy that you're like, huh? Should he be able to get on there? It makes sense. He has a case. But yeah, that's the Magic. They're at 8. So even though they've been the worst offense in the NBA for, I think this whole for the calendar year of 2025, they are in the playoff picture for the Eastern Conference. The Hawks are the 7th seed, and they had just the worst, you know, luck with Jalen Johnson, who was like kind of arguably their best player,
looking really good.
Yeah, this season he went down and is out for the year. And so then it was like, all right, well, this season's a waste. Let's try to tank. But it's hard to tank when all the teams that we've already gone through are in your conference. Because you're going to win some games against those teams who are also trying to tank. And so the Hawks are still, they're hanging, they're surviving. They're here with the 7 seed, 32-36, even without their second best player. And then we got the Pistons at 6, and this is where teams actually get good. So
yeah, very
good. All those teams below, not good. Teams above, good. Pistons at the 6 seed, feel good story. I love it. I'm all here for it. Go ahead.
Who am I, bold? I have the Pistons. Most of this has been chalk in terms of what the record is. That's about where I put them.
Mm-hmm.
This changes for me at 6 with the Pistons.
So, you have them higher than 6, you're saying? Okay.
I do.
Yeah. I see. I think, honestly, my power rankings are, they might be in the exact order. I guess I have the Raptors and the Sixers flipped around. But, so I have.
That's
the
a Raptors, half a game difference.
Yeah, I have the Raptors at 12 and the Sixers at 11. But other than that, the exact order of the standings is my power rankings for the East thus far. And I have the Magic and the Heat flipped around. We just said them in the opposite orders because I'm looking at the standings when I was reading the teams.
Yep.
But yeah, so I do have the Heat at 8 and the Magic at 9. But yeah, the Pistons are at 6 for me. And they are close with the next team. I will give you that one. And Cade Cunningham, I think, is pretty definitively the most improved player according to how it's been awarded throughout its history, where it's like, you know, good player becomes great player is usually the winner. And Cade is a shoe-in, like, you know, candidate in that aspect. But then we have, you know, there's also Norm Powell. What he's doing is an insane case. And then also Christian Brown doing what he's doing is, I think, also a worthy guy to throw out there, literally doubling all of his stats. Every single stat he has doubled it.
Oh,
like the, you know, major, the counting stats, points, rebounds, assists. So yeah, the Pistons have been fun. Got a Thompson twin, obviously the not as exciting one, but still both of them super exciting. Like we said, beef stew. I think you said in the video or the episode that got thrown away forever, you said that when you see beef stew in a NBA post, it's not going to be basketball highlights. Like, you know that, yeah, you're not going to be like watching that.
It was like an Instagram like clip, and it was like this guy, like, it was like him holding his phone with basketball in the background, and he's like pointing, goes, whenever you see this guy on SportsCenter, it's not for basketball.
Yeah, oh, that is, man. Very
but
true.
I feel like that's like kind of just a team energy. Like, they're all willing to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Ron Holland does it a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Beef Stew is the king of the hill. Like, he is that guy. But there's some feistiness to that team. I feel like whoever gets them in the playoffs, whoever unfortunately ends up with the 3 seed or with how close things are as we come down the stretch, maybe it's like they're the 4 or the 5 or the next struggle. Who knows what happens? Who knows what crazy world we live in? Yeah. With how good the Pistons have been.
Especially against the Knicks. I think
they're going to take a lot out of whoever has to play them. Mm-hmm. They're going to make it not fun. Like, it's going to be, it might only be a 5-game series, but it won't feel like that. It'll be brutal. And that's why I have them at 4.
You have the Pistons at 4.
I do. I feel like Cade is awesome. And you need to have a guy that's that good to be that high.
Mm-hmm.
And the trajectory the two teams above them are at, I mean, they're a game and a half behind the Bucks and a game behind the Pacers. Like, they're right there.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And I truly believe that the Pistons, in a knockdown, dragout fight, would really give the Pacers trouble. I feel like that would really not be the type of game the Pacers want to play. And the Bucks could deal with it, like, for sure. But I'm not convinced Beef Stew would not physically maim Giannis. Because both of them are very big, aggressive people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're in the NBA.
Yeah, no, and then all the vet signings for the Pistons working out the way they have, all Malik shooting Beasley? The ball really well.
Goat.
Yeah, Malik Beasley.
Goat.
The second leading 3-point makes on the season for in the entire NBA. He's made more 3-pointers than everybody in the NBA other than Ant Edwards.
It's like the greatest catch and shoot season I've seen with my. He turned into Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
He turned into pre KD Warriors Klay Thompson.
Yeah. He beat the.
The bench.
Yeah, and he broke the all-time or the Pistons, you know, franchise threes made in a season record with 20 games left in the NBA season, which is just insane.
It is preposterous. I love the Pistons are a feel good to the max.
Mm-hmm. Tobias Harris being appreciated
a lethal
somewhere.
Assassin scorer.
Yeah.
As he was, should be appreciated as.
Uh-huh. Tim Hardaway Jr.
Which shooting I dogged it. On. Mm-hmm. I dogged on hard.
Yeah.
He's looked pretty good. It's just a fun team. It's just a very fun team that gives good teams fits sometimes.
And they play like a lot of players. Simone Fontecchio. Like their rotation is legit like 11 people. Like it's kind of crazy. But.
They also need it because they're in foul trouble a lot.
Yeah. but yeah, so the Pacers, I do have just a smidge above them with Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam, Miles Turner, Aaron Neesmith. Yeah, they've got a lot of players too. Andrew Nembhard, TJ McConnell. So all those guys playoff proven over these past couple years, you know.
Made it in a very weird season to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Very weird season.
It was a weird season for sure, but they played really well. They were a really good team in transition, hard to guard, put up lots of points on people. And I think if they catch a similar type of fire in this postseason, they're going to be a hard team to match up with, especially for the Bucks. It seems like that's a team they really get up for, the Pacers, with that Pacers-Bucks rivalry that's been brewing past couple years now.
Geographically, and like it's just a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like OJ Mayo and Paul George used to go rounds. Larry Sanders, right? Is that goggles?
Larry Sanders, yeah. Yeah, he wore goggles.
Power forward?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's like another like old. Oh, he plays Olympic volleyball now. Buttinger.
Oh, Chase Buttinger.
Yeah. Anyway, enough to talk about like not this year Bucks. Would you like to talk about the Bucks? Regularly
of this
now?
Year? Yeah. Giannis, like we said, is having one of his best seasons and somehow is not really in contention for winning the MVP, even though he's a multiple-time MVP winner already. You know, and then outside of him, Dame has had a quietly really, really good season.
He's kind of fit in. It feels like last year was entirely growing pains, and this year is like what we kind of thought last year could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the cast that was already old is older.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Chris Middleton has moved on.
He's a wizard.
Yeah, he's on the Wizards now. Kyle Kuzma has come to the Bucks, fit in pretty well, to be honest.
Doing what Kyle Kuzma does.
Yeah, so that's been good to see. And then Brooke Lopez is aging, but you know he's still stretching the floor down there at the five. Not really getting a lot of rebounds. It's kind of the same story as his whole career so far. And then, I already mentioned Dame, but his playmaking has taken a huge leap this year. It's probably been his best year in terms of playmaking in his career. Gary Trent Jr. started off really bad, but has been insane lately. Probably been the best shooter on the planet the past month, I would guess. He's probably, if you broke it down month by month, he's probably been at the top of leaderboards lately. Taurean Prince has been really good, really consistent all season in terms of his shooting, playing that role. And that's really all they need from those guys, to be honest. AJ Green coming off the bench doing that. Dairy Bird being his nickname. The white guy just comes off their bench to shoot threes.
Which is crazy that that's like the only thing that Larry Bird is remembered for. But like,
yeah,
like did a lot more than that. Like an insane amount more. But
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Threes were actually kind of a very small part of his game when you look at it.
It just is like no one else did it. And that's why I was like, oh, look, that guy can shoot threes. But like, I think his best thing was probably defense. He was like kind of crazy.
You think Larry Bird's best skill was defense?
I'm not
saying he was bad at defense, but that's kind of a crazy take.
I just feel like all his stories are defense.
All of his stories?
That's not true. That's not true.
Yeah, I feel like he's a certified just put 40 on your head and walk the entire time, you know? I guess kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But
that's nuts. Yeah.
And then the Bucks. That's who we had it for. So that's what we've been talking about. The Knicks is who I have at three. So this is literally just chalk. It's weird how it is.
Yeah, but it
at the top,
real.
It will not be chalk, though, here in a second. Because Cavs are the first seed, and if you go by shock, obviously. But the Knicks, I have at three. I think they're comfortably behind the top two.
They also super struggle against the top two.
Yes.
I think is also a big part of it.
And the top teams in the other conference as well. Both conferences. I think above 500, when they're playing against above 500 teams, they have a losing record this season. Yeah.
They're on super fraud alert. Oh, it just helps that the rest of the East below the Pistons isn't even above 500. So there's a lot of games that are below 500.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Pistons are above 500.
No, I say below the Pistons. Everything below.
Oh, gotcha.
The Pistons are the line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's only six teams out of the 15 in the East that have winning records. But yeah, the Knicks have been a weird team because historically, especially with Tibbs in the Tibbs era, have been a great defensive team. And then this year they became one of the best offenses in the league and been like really average on defense, especially with Cat being in there as the five. Mitch Robinson, I think he's back now, but I don't know if he's off of his minutes restriction or not. But that's, the Knicks' hope is to have that dual big lineup being able to solve some of their defensive issues. But I think that kind of hurts them on the offensive end probably. So we'll see how they balance that. Also playing all their guys like so many minutes. Josh Hart leading the league in minutes per game again this season. And then all the other Knicks being in like the top 10 as well. With OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, and Jalen Brunson, as well as Kat. All those guys. Kat and Jalen Brunson both having insane offensive seasons have been really good, but yeah, just not matched up well with the teams above them. So that being the Cavs at two, which Evan Mobley, I think, has really unlocked this Cavs ceiling that we've seen reached this year with his shooting, has been a really, really big thing. Obviously, the other things like Donovan Mitchell shifting his role a bit, delegating more, being more okay with not being like the focal point of not necessarily focal point because he still is the focal point, but like the heliocentric, star that everything kind of rotates around, letting Darius Garland be more of the initiator table setter and playing off of that, in that five-man lineup, I think has helped a lot because that was like their main issue. Even going into the season, a lot of the dialogue we had on this show about them was like they have like their best units are like all of their bench units, like the different like lineups they go to with splitting up their two bigs and their two guards. Like when they have all their five guys starting together, like that is like literally one of the worst lineups they roll out in terms of like how they get outscored and everything.
Yeah.
That has been what's changed this season because of how I think really mainly Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley have adapted and molded their games to fit alongside, their co-stars that they have a lot of overlap with. With Evan Mobley and Jared Allen both being non-spacers, Evan Mobley is a spacer now. And then Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, both guys who need the ball in their hands. Donovan Mitchell doesn't need the ball in his hands this season. Those have been, the two biggest key differences. And then they made a move at the deadline and went and got DeAndre Hunter to fill out, that starting five as a worthy, three-man to put in there.
Essentially consolidated a couple of decent bench guys to play the three into a
starting level
worthwhile starter. Yeah, starting level three. Lost a little bit of depth, but in the playoffs, you need a top eight. You don't need a top 11.
Yeah, for sure. And he was a guy who was actually at the top of the leaderboards for sixth man of the year when he was in Atlanta this year. So, you know, anybody who's in contention for sixth man of the year is at least above average starter, I would say. Yep. And yeah, so he's filled in great there. I think he's more in theory a 3-and-D player than he is in reality with the D part. He's always kind of been pretty inconsistent on that end, but at least he has the size to match up with the big wings on the teams that they're going to have to go through, like the Celtics and the Knicks. So I think that was a big reason for that move as well. But yeah, that's why I put them at two. And I think they're pretty close to the Celtics. It's not like they're nowhere close to them, you know? But I do give the edge to the Celtics, seeing as they have done it before, and I think they just have the highest ceiling with all their guys fitting together. They don't need this kind of strange new feeling, you know, change like the Cavs have gone through to sustain. They have already done it and continue to do it as a team that can drive and kick like more, like just completely drive and kick you to the ground, you know, more than any other team has in NBA history. Putting up like at one point they were over 53s a game. I don't know if they're still there, but just firing those things up left and right. And it has worked out for them. Every player that they put in there in the rotation can shoot. And so you're going to have to guard everybody out there on the perimeter. Jason Tatum has been having, honestly, in a lot of years, you could argue he's in the MVP conversation, but
yeah, just not this year.
Yeah. He's, I think.
And he, weirdly, also feels like dinked for having a team that's good around him. Like, oh, his team's too good. That's why he does all that stuff.
Yeah, it does. Honestly, you're right.
I feel like he gets like weirdly dinked for that, but like
Shea gets not the opposite of dinked.
Shea gets the opposite of dinked, and I feel like Jalen Brunson also has a very good cast around him, and yeah, he never catches any flack for like just being the best player on the team that's just built well.
Yeah.
I also feel like, to a certain extent, Donovan Mitchell catches a little bit of that as well. Other than he recently, as you brought up in our Lost Scrolls recording, he has passed Michael Jordan as the leading scorer against the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Yeah. It's just interesting to me. But yeah, it's whatever. I will take 27, just shy of 9, and just shy of 6. I feel like it's a pretty good season.
Yeah, no, for sure. And he's been their point guard, really, honestly, this season also.
Has been there 63 games.
Is that all the games?
I think 67 is all of our games.
Okay.
He's at a couple, like, hospital Celtics sits. Like, he didn't play, and this is where I really noticed it, he didn't play against the Jazz, and Derek White and Sam Hauser went off. And then I saw a segment on like the talking heads of ESPN and Fox were just like, Celtics even need Jason Tatum? Does he make them better at all? And I got so mad. I called you. I was just irate.
Yeah. That was against the Jazz?
I think that was the Jazz game.
That's crazy.
There's another game where like essentially it was Derek White, Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard just had a good games.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if like I look at our previous couple of games and I had different belt. It was against Portland because Pritchard had 43 points.
And his hometown. Isn't that his hometown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Portland. That's true.
That's crazy. Showing off.
And yeah, then it was just a thing that made me mad. Anyway, whatever. It's fine.
Was that what you wanted to go into about the Celtics? I know you said
a little bit. I just feel like it's just so. Also, I love Al Horford. I want this to be known.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows.
The Celtics played the Lakers, and Kristaps Porzingis was out, mm-hmm, and the Lakers were like, "We're gonna attack Al Horford," and Al Horford was like, "Let's go."
Yeah.
Let's go. And some podcast said the stats, the numbers. He held up hard.
Yeah.
Like, they drove at him like an NBA historic amount of times, mm-hmm, switching on to him and going at him. And Al held
his
the
ground.
Heck up.
Yeah.
The Lakers only scored 101.
Yeah, like, I think against him, too, it was like something
insane.
Crazy low. It was like 30% or something like that is what they shot against.
But they like went at him like 25 times. Like, he was like crazy. And he was like, let's go. And
wow.
He just makes me so happy. Yeah. Everything about the Al Horford story makes me happy. He came here. People were like, what does Al Horford do? And he got so much money, and it like made some Boston people mad because we didn't win. And then he left and got a bunch of money. Didn't look great in Philly. But I also think that's the curse of like, does any team that has a really good starting center ever have a great backup center? I feel like there's just some sort of weird like.
And they try to play him alongside Embiid, which didn't work.
Just,
yeah,
the flow. I think the flow of things just gets messed out of whack. Anyway, looked bad. Straight up looked bad. Then goes to OKC, essentially sits here because they're like, we want to be bad. We want, I think, what turned into Chet.
Yeah, and he was the starting center, but all the games that he sat out was to let friend of the show, Isaiah Roby, start instead. Yeah.
Just a guy. And then comes back to Boston on a bit of a deal because he hasn't looked great, but not like an insane deal. And then keeps just doing Al stuff.
Yeah,
and he has like no fear of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, not at all, except for the ball on free throws. when he's standing in the lane for some, that's been his whole career, but he's still afraid of that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's a bit that he's doing, right? I've heard him explain it before. When he flinches when the ball comes off the rim, that thing.
I think my favorite one is like the one where he went like his like face. He like literally made like a scared face.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's joking around, but it's funny to watch that.
I love Al Horford so much. Not a shocker. And then that was pretty much my Celtics corner. I just feel like we get, mostly, not even we. I just feel like Jason Tatum gets like, and I would get it if he was like accused of things that former NBA players have been accused of, or like faces of the league, or players playing in the league. The man has done almost nothing. Was super bad. Other than like he went to Duke and that might tick people off. He plays for Boston. That may make people mad. But like it's not like he has accusations. He has a son that's around and that irritates people. He gets called corny.
Yeah, people don't like him because he's corny, and I put in quotes. I don't know.
What is LeBron James to you people?
No, for real. Yeah. That's
LeBron
a very good point.
James will like post a video on his Instagram live. Very clearly with Spotify open with the lyrics there, and he'll be like rapping. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
You can see the reflection on his glasses. The lyrics are right there. He's reading them.
I started watching the NBA Starting Five or Starters or whatever that documentary is called on Netflix.
Yeah.
I shut it off after the scene where he's like, I listen to so much music. There's so many. I got so many artists on my phone. I've got Eminem. I've got Jay-Z. I've got Nas. And I was like, all right, I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And then he did that weird, like, Big Brother thing against Stephen A.
Oh, yeah. It's
weird.
Yeah.
In the middle of a game.
Recently, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Stephen A was like, I don't want to talk about this, but I have to.
And then
like, what?
Proceeded to talk about it on, like, three different shows.
And then on his podcast, like, a week later, because, like, he recorded his 1 week's podcast that didn't do, like, an emergency pod, because that would have been too crazy. Anyway, that just was weird to me. I'm flattered that you put my Celtics above the Cavs, but if we don't have KP, I don't know if you can count us with KP, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know what that looks like.
Uh-huh.
I will ride with my boys till the end. I will be sad if we lose, keyword if. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have healthy KP against Cavs. Let me look at the NBA.
I think, honestly, it might just be the Cavs you should be worried about in that case.
I'm just saying in general.
Oh, like both conferences?
Yeah, like Cavs for sure in the East. I think that's the only one where I'm like, I don't think we can win this without at least a couple of games of KP.
And I guess if the Knicks have Mitchell Robinson fully healthy and things are clicking, that might be a little bit tough, but...
They don't get beat to garbage, like just get the snot beat out of them by the Pistons and they're hobbling and fighting for their lives. But like,
yeah,
I don't think we could beat OKC without KP. I'm not sure we can with KP. I think I'd like to think we can because we have like guys that
but you don't know if you will for sure.
Don't know if I will. I'm not confident being like, we're going to win this series.
Yeah. For sure. I think without KP,
Nuggets would be tough.
Yeah, Nuggets would be tough.
Grizzlies would be tough.
I wouldn't be scared of the Grizzlies.
Well, no, because the thing that I'm terrified about with the Grizzlies is they just switch Jaw onto Al as much as Jaw's fast.
Yeah.
He's so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we don't have, I guess Jason Tatum then kind of turns into what Robert Williams used to do as like the bat, but that's not the same. And we can't let Jason Tatum get in foul trouble with what he's doing for us offensively, as you said so eloquently, essentially our point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And we have like the best guards in the NBA to like fight through screens. And I just, without KP, I get a lot more scared against almost every single team in the West that's making the playoffs. Like all of them scare me a little bit. If you just take the top eight, because mm-hmm. I'm like, we'll just get unlucky and we won't see Kawhi. But like, it's just difficult. The only thing that makes me feel like maybe we'd be okay against the Nuggets and I'd probably still take my guys, I'd ride with my guys, is we can put Jamal in hell, essentially, and that's when the Nuggets look really not good. That's what the Timberwolves do. They just put Jamal in prison and make Jokic do a lot of things, and then they can do enough with bodies to make Jokic's life just enough worse, and
Yeah, which is the thought behind getting Russ this season is to have at least another person who can dribble the ball up the floor. So hopefully that will come into play there.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get you for sure. The Celtics would be a team that I would be afraid of.
It's definitely a tier. It is a tier above for sure, no matter what, of the Cavs and the Celtics. But that's about all the time I have today. I got to get to some stuff if you're good to wrap up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. So that will finish out these Eastern Conference power rankings from the Hoop Theory podcast. Thank you for listening or watching at home, whatever you're doing. That will be it for today's episode. And thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. Stay happy. Stay healthy. We will talk to you guys next episode.
Peace.